ました。
Hi, I'm Neil and welcome to the Crosscast. In today's show, we are going to look back on the 2024 World Championships that came from Tabor in Czechia. We're going to be reviewing the racing, of course, looking at the highs and lows and seeing whether there were any surprises in our podiums. We're going to be seeing which of us proved to be the best at predicting the outcome of the races and perhaps also who may have been best at predicting what the winning margins were. So who is the us? Well, I'm joined in the studio by Ian Field and Matt Payne, both of whom were putting words to the TV action over the weekend. I think it was your first visit to Tabor, Matt, and were there any surprises for you when you actually saw it up close and personal?
In terms of Tabor, yes, it was incredibly pretty town centre, some really nice burgers houses and some nice architecture, and the river's absolutely stunning. And actually, when you go walk down from the media centre and the UCI offices down into the course, it's really nice. I saw no factories. I saw lots of trees and lots of nice green fields and a lovely river and a great setting. And it kind of almost made me go, hang on a minute, what do we normally see? And is my memory skewed? And thinking it's some Eastern Bloc architectural monstrosity, and it's not. I think it was really interesting. In terms of the actual course, the bend is not as sharp as it looks on TV on the straight. It's a long, sweeping, very gradual curve. When you see it on TV, it looks like the turn out of a corner around it, and that is actually really different on there. The banks where the planks are and the amount of mud is probably a little bit skewed. And the big thing was it's very much a course of three areas, which I did probably waffle on about in the commentary quite a lot, in that you have the riverside area, which is absolutely pancake flat. There's nothing. This is literally zero on it other than the bridges and a couple of bumps. But then you go up onto sort of the shelf, the rise up onto the top, and then the plateau section. And actually, the height elevation is pretty big up to the top, and you don't realize that. As always with TV, it sort of flattens it all out a bit. But it changed a lot, and a lot of it was due to the conditions. I mean, I think they were saying it was we'd had this super cold snap, 2 weeks plus of minus 15, and like everybody was skating on the fish ponds that are around the area, and they said it was like a mini Netherlands almost with the ice skating and the speed skating, everybody enjoying that. And then in the space of about 3 days, it went from that to being above freezing. And that actually changed the course more than anything else. And if I'm honest, I didn't the course much. I'm not going to say that too loudly. You didn't hear that really, but no, it didn't produce for me key moments. It didn't produce for me differentiators in the course. It just was about who could put down the most watts and who could put down the most power and not make perhaps a mistake, rather than actually being any skill level in there. And I know it sounds terrible, but that, for me, kind of, unfortunately for the organisers, it seems to be how it played out with the weather. But that was from me down there. I mean, I'm not sure whether that interpretation of the conditions came through. In you obviously, like me, get to see all the early parts of the action. Neil was stuck watching just the public consumption bits. You get all the background shots and the bits coming across early, a bit like, I'm sure, like me in the studio. Did it come across that it was very much about just being power?
Yeah, exactly that. And unfortunately, I think the organisers just got completely caught out with those conditions. We've never seen mud like that in Tabor. You expect a fast kind of almost group racing scenario, and the riders just ended up racing against the course rather than racing against the other riders. We saw that in a number of races where it was just like riders, you could almost see like, I'm not going to go with that because I'm going to blow up as a result. And it's such a hard course that there's nowhere to recover. There's nowhere to come back from blowing up. So I'm just going to have to ride my own pace for 40 minutes, 50 minutes, 60 minutes, however long their race was. I think they were potentially slow to react. it was fairly obvious as soon as the team relay happened, the weather forecast through the weekend. I would have liked to have seen them take out quite a bit of that lower section of the course. It was quite samey, a little bit one-liney, kind of click and paste a little bit with those banks and features down on that bottom section. I mean, when I first went to Tabor, you went kind of round that start loop and then almost straight across to those final lumps and then up onto the hillside. I don't think it needed those extra banks, the steps. It just, yeah, could have shortened it. The lap was too long. Yeah, it was disappointing.
Yeah, we saw the laps being, you know, being really long from the first race onwards. You know, and quite a lot of the races were, what were they, three laps, four laps? Yeah, so, which in the end, I think the duration of the races were, you know, didn't seem to be too much of an issue, and probably wouldn't have changed the outcomes. But yeah, you also feel for the people there on the ground. Yeah, they get fewer times of seeing the riders coming past. Although, of course, particularly as we saw in the final races of the weekend, the crowds were quite capable of running across like en masse, yeah, like a herd of sheep.
It was something that was one of the. So there were some really good things to take from the Tabor organisation and what they did. So crowd access around the course was probably the best I've seen anywhere, in that they didn't just think about whether the riders go, the team mechanics, etc. The crowd could get everywhere. The number of grandstands to view key parts, which then actually also gave you a view of the rest of the course. It gave you height, so it allowed you to see a lot more of what was going on elsewhere, was good. And by bringing it closer, more compact in terms of its geographical spread, it actually then made that people could watch it. So from a spectator point of view, it was very, very, very good. And the access in and out was good. And there was, but it potentially, yeah, I think the conditions, it did make it difficult. And it was good for the crowds that they could get across, because I think your point is well made there, Neil. Low lapses, low view numbers.
Yeah, and the benefits of a venue like Tabor, which has been used so many times, the organisers get to know what works, what doesn't work. You know, we say it all the time on the crosscast, and you compare that to, I don't know, dare I mention the word Dubendorf in terms of spectator viewability. You know, so you go back to previous years, and they're not always that good. But even for people watching it on the coverage, I'm never quite sure what you two get to see in terms of like on screens and stuff. But this time, you know, there was a bit more on screen graphics, you know, from gaps and, you know, lap times, and even the Formula One style pit times. What did you think of those?
I loved them. I thought it was great. I almost wish they were more consistently on for everyone. I almost wish that we had all this. I do a lot of esports commentary, and there you are really data driven, because you are seeing a lot more of the e-cycling, so Zwift, MyWoosh, etc., and you get a lot more data. So it's a lot more like Formula One. You know, you get to see what the power people are producing, the heart rates, the lot. And in some ways, that's what we were getting with those pit times. And I just wish it was like every time somebody went into the pit, they showed it, and it was always there. Because I didn't just want to know what the guys at the front were doing. I wanted to know what the guys at the back were doing with pits, because that relevance then allows you to tell the story of that, particularly when you have, let's say, a runaway race winner and you've got the opportunity maybe to focus on things that are not the race, just at the, you know, between the two or three leading protagonists. I thought that it was good. We don't always get to see what you see. Not sure what Ian was getting at, because I suspect it was probably very similar to the one that I was seeing. But I liked the graphics. I liked the further run through, the ticker at the side rather than at the bottom. It just had that different feel, because it was a different production company. It was Czechia TV produced everything in there. So it was not the traditional Belgium TV crew who do most, if not all of it. Definitely.
I really enjoyed the graphics. I thought the pit stop, pit lane kind of timer was really, really good. It's always whenever someone changes your bike, you're, as a commentator, you're like, oh, they probably lost about 1 to 2 seconds there. And there we had it on our screen. Like they exactly lost 2.3 seconds or something like that compared to a rider that didn't change. So that was really, really good. One thing, while we're talking about graphics, I want to bring up the team relay. Brilliant, brilliant race. However, unless you're sat there and you know the team's inside out with a notepad, they really need to do some sort of graphic telling you who's been and who's to come for each team. Because I know part of the excitement is not knowing how it's going to play out, but it'd also be nice to have some idea what's coming. Because unless you've noted down who's been for every country, because one, a country can come from like eighth into the the podium battle in the space of a lap and a half. So I think graphics need to be upped on that.
Yeah.
But apart from that, the graphics were brilliant.
Well, two things. One of them, the coverage, full stop, is progress of that, or partial coverage on that. But yeah, I mean, you could do it like, dare I say, like penalty shootouts. You know, you could have these are the six categories of riders, and when each of them's gone, it's like these ones have gone and these ones are still to come.
100%.
Yeah, it would be dead easy to do. But of course, someone's got to do it. And I almost think that was kind of part of the problem with the pit one, was it looked to me like someone was kind of manually having to do something on it rather than if it's just an auto, one timing point before the yellow flag, so everyone goes over it, one afterwards, then that would have been quite interesting to do.
Okay.
The other thing I noticed was there was coverage much further down the field, it seemed, this time. And it wasn't just because the Chechia riders were being picked out by the local company. And that's great. It's always good to see that because you always get really, really fun crowd response. And you can see the look on the face of someone who's given it absolutely everything for their local. But we did actually get to see much more action for what was going on further down the field. Whatever their nationality was, sometimes you're looking for the Belgian riders and where are they? But, other times it was all very clear of this is a full top 10 that we can see where the action's coming from.
Do you want to let into a little secret here? Do you want a little secret? The director, for the first time in I don't know how long, was different. And that is almost, it's 100% due. What came out was due to direction. And the director very much had a very different style. And it wasn't just in terms of the shots you saw, it was the duration of the shots. It was when you look at the coverage and where they were focusing on, how they were looking at it. Even though the brief was very similar in terms of what we wanted to project out, the way that the director cut things made it a very different feel. And I thought it did two things. I thought, it was great for looking at the riders further down the field, but I also thought it distinguished it. It made it different from the World Cup. And I thought that was the other good thing about the graphics, that the feel of it was different because it's the World Championships. And I think that's important. I actually think there should be a deliberate change from a World Cup series and the X2Os and the whatever to the World Championships. It is the, it's a blue ribbon event.
Yeah, it is.
So it was good, but it was a lot of that is all in the director. Don't ask me what will happen next time around because we're going to go to living in France and it's likely to return to a non-French TV production company. But don't quote me on that because I don't know.
Well, let's get on to look at some of the action. So let's jump into the team relay. Another really entertaining race. Yeah, I saw my pick France, leading it the whole way. Matt's pick, Great Britain, just getting, not picked on the line, but just not making it to the line. And Ian's pick, Belgium, in third. So between us, I think we had a full podium, so we could all feel quite pleased with ourselves, I think. We could probably discuss the race all day, but for me, I really enjoyed it off the start. And seeing Zoe Backstead racing against the junior boys in a lot of the cases, and it kind of took me back to like under 14s racing, where you've got that leading girl trying to stay on with the leading boys. And I thought, this is, you know, Zoe's done this before. And even at the end of that first lap, it was still really, really close. I thought that was really impressive. But yeah, it was great. And I think that it based on what you put on the social media, Matt, that finish was actually really, really close, a lot closer than it actually looked when I watched it live.
Yeah, it's, I mean, I had a lucky stroke, you know, it happens when you're in the right place at the right time syndrome. I had a look at the photo finish, and I think it went out on social media. It's all a bit of a blur the weekend still, sleep deprived blur. But yeah, it was close. The whole race was really interesting. I'd got a lot of insider information about tactics and about what people were going to do. And I'll be brutally honest, I could have been in the studio because I couldn't use any of it. I was literally from the four of the teams told me their exact tactics and why they'd done it and what they were aiming for. And I couldn't use any of it. And it was like, we will tell you, but you do not put this on TV. And I was like, okay, that's great. It means, I guess, I know what's likely to come. But actually, yeah. And there was a lot of tactical moves in there. And if you were watching on YouTube, apologies if you didn't get all of the tactical discussion that started off. Anyone who's watching on satellite apparently got the whole intro and the tactical conversation and me summing up that we had three starting with men elite and four starting with men junior and one, you know, women under 23 starting off the race. And then these were the finishing anchors. And so apologies if you didn't get that on YouTube. Yeah, I did quite literally have a moment of sprinting around the studios, but trying to make sure that we did go out on everything. And thank you, everybody who messaged. It was a lot of you. Just tell me you couldn't hear me. But yeah, it was close. It was super close. The sprint was super close. But I thought GB's tactics, brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. Why does not everybody not do this? I don't know, but maybe we should not over-egg it because we don't want them all doing this. But then there were some great rides and there were some rides that clearly I think people were disappointed with across the board. And I don't particularly want to single out any country or riders here because I think it was very evident that it gave an indication to people, we are actually going really well here, or we're not going that well. And it's set in people's heads, I think. I mean, it can bond a team and make a team, or it can break a team. And I think there was a degree of that in the way it rode out. France, I mean, from there on in, I was sat after the race thinking, well, yeah, bring it on. France are going to be really, really strong all the way through. And actually, Czechia had some great rides in there as well. So the Czech riders were phenomenal. And they were my real takeaways from that, really, was France and Czechia are going to be, they are going to now be up for this. What about you, Ian? Did you take anything from that into the next days?
There was obviously some standout laps put in by certain riders within that team relay, and it's a good indication for the weekend ahead. And it kind of came to fruition. Those fastest lap times were put in by riders that went on to do very, very well in their individual races. Spot on. I think GB had the best tactics out of any team. The problem is, that first lap, you have to do something different, because when you initially look at the team relay, it's like, well, each rider's got to do their lap. They're going to be able to do a certain lap time, add it all up, and that's your finishing time. But the key to it is a little bit like F1 qualifying. You need clear track. The worst thing is that opening lap and all those men/boys battling each other meant that Zoe stayed with them for an awful long time compared to perhaps if some of those men had been kind of in clear air, they would have been able to put in ultimately a better lap time and put more distance into Zoe. So I think GB got the tactics absolutely spot on by doing something different with that first lap. And ultimately that gave GB kind of clear track. And it was only really Oscar Amy that had to kind of overtake people. And he was overtaking a lot of women, junior women as well. So it didn't affect his lap time too much. Obviously got held up a little bit in that first quarter of a lap, kind of where it's a bit one-liney. But apart from that, just really good to watch. I think it's a great event. It kicks off the weekend. And like Matt says, it kind of brings teams together. And yeah, I thoroughly enjoyed watching it.
Excellent. So at the end of day one, if we call that day one or day zero, we'll just stop our crosscast competition there. So I had a win. There we go. That's all we need to know on day one from our predictions. So let's move overnight to the junior women's race. This time, Celia Jarry took the junior women's title, making it 2 out of 2 for France at that point. Who, no, well done, both of you. That was, you both picked Jarry, finishing ahead of Ferguson. And my pick, Schladnova. I'm always relieved when we've got a leading trio comprising of our picks. And Ian, I thought that race gave us some indication of just really how tough the course was over the weekend. No, it was slow, as we said earlier. But it gave us also some really, really tight racing.
It was probably the best race of the weekend, the closest come that final lap out of all the races. And it was great to see kind of riders using different strengths and weaknesses against each other. It was, yeah, tactically really good from Jarry on that final lap to get ahead on those technical sections, open up the gap on Kat. Kat looked like she had the legs to win it, but you got to have the technical skills as well. And I mean, we're talking about a course that wasn't overly technical. It just had very, very small, kind of that cambered corner was the main technical feature. And ultimately, that's where the race was won and lost.
Yeah. I mean, I saw that slip and that foot down. And for me, that was the pivotal moment in the run for gold and silver. You know, that, and at the time, I actually put it into the country. Is this the moment? Is this the one move? And it was. It showed us, I think, for the rest of the weekend that one slip could be the difference. One slide could be the difference. And it's not always just down to the rider. Sometimes it's just down to a change in the course, a change in things. You know, somebody else had slipped out there previously on the line that she was on and just broken it up a little bit. Then it went, all those things. I mean, I was absolutely gutted for Kat. You know, it showed how much she wanted it, and it was two silver medals in 2 days. And you know, I think it, had you gone into that and said, well, we're going to be in the medals twice in 2 days, we would have taken that. But then twice with the same one for Ferguson, a tricky one. You know, we know she'll be back, we know she's you know, going to be racing, and she'll be riding, she'll take that on board, and there's going to be many more, I'm sure, many more races. Jarry was just superb, you know. I thought that came across really well. And actually, when you saw them coming behind the stage, going onto and off the podium, she looked like she could have done that 10 times over. And that was really noticeable afterwards, that when they were finished doing all of their press stuff, I was between races, backstage, and she just looked like she'd not even done anything. I mean, honestly, it was scary. It really, really was. And it was noticeable to all the other riders that she was like, yep, bring it on, come on, you want to do that all over again? Let's go. You know, and I know some of that's winning bounce and, you know, joie de vivre, but no, she was good.
I think there's a lot of bounce if you've just put on a new stripy jersey, man. There's a lot of bounce there.
Yeah,
I've always used the term of, you know, it's the being chased by a dog interval. You know, you're absolutely blown. And then if you get chased by a dog when you're riding through French villages, which is where it always seems to happen in my life, you know, suddenly you discover that you can put out 1,000 watts for 10 seconds, you know, even though you were completely... But it's a really interesting thing in sports physiology, that how can we do that? You know, could we just not unlock that by some other means on that last lap? Yeah, and maybe, you know, if it had gone the other way, then we'd have seen it... know, could have seen those, that emotional boost reversed. I think it was another great race. Schladnova was really impressive. I thought yeah, I was pleased that she managed to hold it up to the finish, because she looked like she was going pretty hard at the start. You know, and as my pick, I was kind of willing her to just, you know, calm down. I really entertained. You'd say I think it was one of the most exciting races of the whole weekend. But just one final thing on that. I mean, Ian, one of the things that was noticeable was it was kind of the last proper time past the pits, where Stadenova and Jerry both pitted, and Ferguson kind of rode past, but she was like looked over her shoulder and saw that they'd pitted. And at that point, I just kind of wondered, you know, what would have gone in through her head at that moment, because it looked to me like she suddenly thought, oh no, you know, I've made a mistake. Or do you think it would make that much difference pitting at that stage?
I think it was a key moment in the race. I think Kat not changing, but if you don't change, you've got to gain an advantage from not changing, and she didn't take it. If she had opened up a few bike lengths there, it looked like she had the legs on that top section of the course, and I feel like even if she had maybe lost those few bike lengths in that technical turn, it would have been her leading into that drag, and then Jerry would have been on the back foot, and then it would have been down to the finish, and I think Ferguson probably would have taken it. I think she noticed too late that they'd both gone into the pits. So yeah, unfortunate really. And also the fresh bike over the course of that last quarter or half a lap or so, just it's going to add up. The bikes were getting heavy, especially on that race. It became less and less over the weekend. The kind of mud got tackier and didn't come up onto the bikes quite as much. So yeah, that was quite a pivotal moment for me.
I would agree. Now, I where it was when you were stood down there, and it maybe didn't come across well on camera, was because you came out of that pit into a tight left turn that was basically no matter what you did, you weren't going to go around that fast. There was always going to be compression. So even if you had sprinted down the straight and not taken a bike, because you were compressed into that corner, the guys coming out of the pit, which was so close, were so tight on the wheels that you weren't going to stay clear. And I think that for me was one of the key things, that there was no reason not to pit. I don't know why. I almost, you know, think every single rider should have been pitting every single lap in that pit, because there was no advantage. It was, I didn't see anybody gain advantage, even when they looked back and gave it big beans. It all come back together again by the time they were coming up into the bank with the planks. And I mean, the bank with the planks, well, you know, that was a non-feature almost, you know. Yeah. It really was. And that, from in practice, I saw three riders bunny hop that total at all on all of the time there. So let's say I missed, you know, 10 times that. There were 30 times people did it, and they were all, when it was frozen, in the practice before the team relay. Nobody had gone over that in the before the junior women's race and onwards. And I think knowing where that course was and where that was, maybe that was an error that was committed by a lot of people. Easily done, but, you know, I think maybe that was something that, looking back, people are going to look back and think, wow, we need to do that again. You know, we need to be a bit more aware in the future.
Mm. So for the under 23s, we had our favourite Del Grosso, so much of a favourite that we all picked him, who took the Netherlands' first title of the weekend. Bizio couldn't make it 3 out of 3 for France, but this time we had a sprint finish between Verstringer and Jente Mitchells for second place, of course, for Belgium. But a big crash at the start this time.
Huge. Yeah. I mean, I think I said in commentary it was easier to count who didn't get caught up in that early crash compared to who did. For me, some of the images, you saw people at the back sprinting into the back of the crash. They just didn't quite realise what had gone on. And yeah, all started with Strohmeyer got a really good start, then kind of lost it towards the outside of the course and caught that rut into the barriers, and then just a huge ripple effect all the way across the course. And yeah, a lot of the big favourites got caught up in it.
Yeah, and Strohmeyer, I thought he was impressive how well he fought back from that. You know, you could see him working his way up and ended up, I can't remember where he finished, but it was top 10. So yeah, he was, no, not top 10, top 16, 16th. So he was I thought he had a good ride afterwards, but yeah, of course, really disappointing for him.
It was impossible to see what happened down there and why did it. When I the moment the race finished, I quite literally threw the headphones off. I sprinted out the back door of the truck, the one they're not most supposed to use, went through the TV compound and nicked over the side through VIP and could cut across to that part. And I went underneath the big bridges that were just monumental, went up there, and everybody's looking at me like I'm really weird. And I was searching there, and I was joined by about four or five people, all looking on that straight, thinking, well, what caused that? And we need to know. And there were teams were sending people down to look at where Strohmeyer went down to try and work out what on earth it was. And then why did everybody plow into the back of other people? Because it was a long curve on the tarmac round with branded barriers, you couldn't really see what was happening. And then it chicaned off and it went over a section basically where there is a bridge over a ditch. And that's why that section's used, the bridge over a ditch effectively. The ditchway is then off to the rider's left. And it was really dry. There was no mud. There was no ice. There was no stones. There was nothing. And we were all stood there just scratching our heads going, well, why? And then I've watched it back since, and I still can't quite work out why. And then the way it rippled across, and like you say, people sprinting into the back of it. I think it's only just it's blind panic that the race. They're looking at the bridge, and it was a big, imposing bridge in front. They're seeing people going over the bridge, and they're looking around, looking at the going over the bridge, not at the rider in front, because that's the only explanation I can find for the way riders ploughed in the back. I mean, Ian, surely you're looking not just 50 metres up into the air, you're going to be looking and seeing what's happening. You're going to hear it.
Yeah. The other rider I'm going to take note of is Ian Acker. So someone I'm not familiar with, although when I looked them up afterwards, it's not one of those, you look them up afterwards and they've certainly got some good, got some Pan Am and National Championships for Canada, but finished sixth. And you know, let me just tell you, read out some of the results. I'm sure you would have done this on some of your homework, but Zonhoven 32nd, okay, riding in the elite, and then Benidorm under 23s 14th, Hugerheide 11th, and then world champs Tabor. You know, I mean, that's a great way to get your best performance, you know, out at the big race of the day. But someone I don't know anything about really, but certainly someone that we need to have on our radar for next year, because he's only a first year under 23.
Yeah, so he was a big hope in Hugerheide the previous year for the juniors, but if you remember rightly, there was that big crash off the start. He was one of those riders, along with AJ August, who got caught up in that and put in a really, really good ride. He's been like, yeah, kind of Canadian hope of podium kind of worlds for a little while. And to be honest, that ride in Tabor was a little bit above what I expected. I thought he'd be kind of that 10th to 15th range that he's been showing previously. So yeah, a huge, huge talent coming out of Canada.
Yeah. So let's go on to the final race of the day, the elite women. This time we saw Femme Van Empel defend her jersey ahead of Lucinda Brand and Puck Peters. And Ian, what you said almost mirrored what we were saying at home on your commentary, which was, I think you just described it as perfection.
What could you say? Literally just took off, rode her own pace. And yeah, that pace was fast enough to distance every other woman in the world by a huge margin. I looked up a previous margin bigger than that was 2013, I think, Louisville. And before that, you're even struggling. So I think it potentially the second biggest winning margin for elite women. I didn't go further back, but I was struggling to think of one before that, because on the whole, elite women's world championships are tight, close events. Like, you look at the time gaps, yeah, in the previous few years and you've been talking about seconds, let alone getting anywhere near a minute. And what was it by the end? A minute 40 or something? Like, just
120.
Incredible.
Yeah,
120, and that's an important
number. It was 120,
number.
But it came back down. It came back down, didn't it?
It went up to 140.
And then, you know, there was that easing and that celebration that riders who've done such a you know, a perfect ride, you know. I think the words masterclass, perfection, you know, imperious, you know, just dominating, you know, all those were, they were rolling around the commentary box in multiple languages, you know, where I was. And I, what a ride, what a rider. You know, just, she's so divorced from what's around, going on around her. And that's actually true in the practice. And that was one of the things that really I noticed being on site, was that she is in a bubble. She's in her own little bubble. She switches off. That switch is superb. She switches off. She comes in. She gets the job done. Once the job's done and then it's all over, then it, you know, she changes back again. But she's definitely, even going from road, from the finish to the podiums, you know, she's still in that bubble. She's still on that. This is me. This is what I do. I'm doing this. This is a normal day for me. I'm not going to be, you know, it was nice to see a smile coming down the finishing straight. And it, you know, it was like, but it was almost a smile of, yeah, watch and weep, everybody. This is what I'm going to do. And this is what I'm going to do again. This is me in a nutshell. So I do this. This is, you know, I'm good. And really, really impressive. Some really impressive rides. I thought Clara Hunsinger's ride for eighth place, I was really impressed by that. And Vedonshot in fifth. Again, I mean, a rider absolutely ecstatic with her position going in. One of the nice moments, actually, was when you saw Hunsinger coming in over the line and going back and saying, oh, I'm really sorry, I just rolled you on the line. Because that was really interesting to see. But I thought the whole thing, it showed Femme Van Empel as being amazing. It showed Lucinda Brand as being exactly what we know she is, an absolute champion. And just had it not been for Femme, it would have been a lot closer. Put Petersen, a bad day at the office. She clearly was unhappy. You know, I think she was putting a brave face on it there, saying, well, you know, I came, I saw, I got my medal. Great. You know, I can't complain about that. But it was definitely a race which showed where we're heading and summed up the season in a lot of ways.
Yeah, I think so. And you know, Alvarado up in fourth, Casasola in sixth. So you know, some strong rides there, and you know, they're coming up, but you know, they're still 2.5-3 minutes behind Van Empel. So Van Empel's so dominant at the moment, and on the looks of it, as it currently is, you know, who else can bring it to her? No, there'll be riders coming up. We have one, Backstead, who will be, you know, coming up and presumably getting quicker. But we had missing in actions as well, you know, with Vass not there, and perhaps some other riders who have been world champs in the past. So Prevost and Vos, I don't know if we'd see Vos ever back, but you know, with Prevost being able to take it to a world championships as we saw in the mountain biking last year. But even so, I think Van Empel would have been well ahead.
So here's a question for you. If Van Empel is as dominant as she is now, will she stay with Cross, like we've seen, say, for example, with Matthew Van Der Poel, who, you know, has stayed a lot longer than maybe some people would have predicted? Or are we going to see her just be really clinical about where she rides and where her career goes? What do you think?
I think she'll probably be pretty clinical. I think she'll want to win more cross world titles. I think hopefully that team and herself see the value of Cross and can use it. I think that's why Van Der Poel stayed with it for as long as he has. He sees the value of it. He understands what he can get out of it that can help him come summer goals. So hopefully, fingers crossed, she does stay with it and doesn't, yeah, think, oh, that's box ticked, move on sort of thing for the sport in general, but also just, yeah, for us as fans of the sport, we want to see the biggest riders winning the biggest races, and it's exactly what she is right now. For me, the most exciting thing to come out of the weekend is seeing her down to do Gent-Wevelgem and Tour of Flanders in 6 weeks' time or so. I cannot wait.
yeah. Well, the biggest errors that we saw on this was actually how poor everyone, and I'm talking to you listeners as well, we were at predicting what the winning margin was. Absolutely no one was close. So, we were all way, way off, you know, with from the three of us with, you know, Matt, you were the closest of the three of us, and you said you were about a minute off with your 36.8 seconds.
So hang on, I was the best of the worst. Yeah, great.
Well, no, but even amongst...
Well, best of the bad.
Well, no, you were still one of the best. I think you were the second best prediction out of everyone.
Can we stop the show now, please? Stop saying best of the show. Go for it.
My biggest mistake of the last couple of weeks is adding in this stupid who can predict the winning margin thing, because I've absolutely fluffed on that one. So that's dominated my results here. So let me tell you where we stand at the end of day one. So we had, listen to this. This is Robert Rogers. He picked France, 3 points. Schladenova, good move. That was my pick, 1 point. Then Del Grosso, and then a podium of Van Empel, Brand, and Peters, with a Van Empel to be leading after three laps and a 32-second margin. This guy's a clairvoyant.
Are you sure he didn't put it in afterwards?
I checked. But yeah, absolutely amazing. Every podium correct. And everyone in the right place, apart from Schladenova. And then on equal second best was Murray Gray and someone else, Matt Payne, who was the...
Oh, hang on. Whoa. Hang on. So, look, I'm not going to claim this for me, but we've got to make the most of this moment that actually one of the three of us, doesn't really matter which one of us it is, might be me, actually managed to get somewhere like on a podium in terms of with all of the listeners as well, because generally we get hammering. That's all right.
Yeah, you did really, really well.
Between, I'm pleased with that. Voss was my pick for the three lapper, and she didn't even take the race start. So, you know, that's not bad. That was a miss point as well. Where were you two? How were you with Chloe?
Well, it depends if you include the winning margins or not.
Yes, obviously. you don't listen. You put it in, not me.
I'm not. We're not even in the top six, Ian. We're way down. Must be bottom half.
Well, and who's in front of the two of you? So,
okay, let me tell you.
The cross-cast presenters' podiums. Where are we at the minute?
So, at the moment, cross-cast podiums after day one is Matt Payne, 16 points. Ian Field, 12 points, and Neil Mansfield, 10 points. So, I put it all down to that crazy idea from that fool who put in, what's the winning margin going to be? And being unable to predict them. Okay.
Hoisted by his own petard.
So, yeah, I know. Yeah, exactly. So, end of day one, we had a nice evening. I went over to the Notts and Derby awards night, which was really good fun. Really enjoyed that. Was pretty tired after all of that. I have to say it was a good day. And then up bright and early the next morning to watch the junior men. In this case, we had the win from my pick, Viesi, ahead of Solon and Brazant and other riders who didn't quite have enough. Philipson, Ian, you picked Philipson and not quite enough there, but was someone to watch actually as coming, you know, carving their way through and perhaps was hindered by their grid. But Viesi, absolutely fantastic. And who knows what would have happened if it wasn't for that badly timed puncture.
Yeah. Yeah. I watched that race. And I have to say, probably the most impressive rise was not about the race win. Because Stefano Viesi seemed to he won it despite his riding style. I know he's taken like the World Cup, but he just liked to just go, it's kind of coming up. Let's just go in as fast as we can and see what happens. And then it would be a couple of standstill and he yanked the bike around it. And then next lap, he'd do exactly the same thing. It was like it was like one tactic in his head. And he was effective. I can't take it away from him. You know, he's a world champion. But Viesi for me was, it was, if you were a style fashionista of cyclocross technique, you must have been crying sometimes about some of the techniques showed through the racing. And other people were brilliant. I mean, Kaya Solon's move up through the race field into second was really, I thought that was a really gutsy ride. I mean, third in the World Cup series, he's a rider who really moved well in there. And Phillipson, I mean, Ian, that was an inspired pick. I think you were really unlucky in some ways that he wasn't right up at the top there.
Yeah, I think a
really good rider.
That was when we were not picking the same as each other at that point. So I had to
you might not have. I was blatantly going for the win from the word go, but there you go.
Yeah. It's a bit unfortunate because I think I would have gone Viesi for the win, even though I felt Sparfell should have won it, could have won it. But that's the way the cookie crumbles sometimes. It's punches and crashes, part and parcel of, yeah, kind of cyclocross racing. Did anyone see on social media the video of Viesi's front wheel after that crash on the final lap where Strohmeyer went down? Completely pringled. If he'd be on cantilevers, it would have been race over. He would have had to disconnect the front brake. So that's why potentially on that last lap he was panicking, because he was obviously looking down at that front wheel thinking that is all over the place. So yeah, the Italians put up a video completely pringled from hitting the feet of those barriers. So you can maybe understand now why he was panicking so much. But he looked out of control a little bit before then anyway. He's just pure power engine. But the leap he has made in the last 12 months is just unbelievable. 33rd in Hoogerheide to world champion in a year.
World champion and World Cup winner. I mean, it's like does the double. You got to feel Sparfell. The overriding comment from everybody, not just in the commentary box, but from the speakers, Nico and the crew, the mechanics, everybody was real deal. He is it. Whatever it is, he is it. Sparfell has it. And you look at those lap times from the team relay. Fastest lap time was Michael Van Turen out on the last lap. Michael Van Turen out putting the fastest time on that lap. I think Ian's shaking his head here. I'm sure he was fastest on the last lap. Sparfell's time was within, I think, 1.4 seconds.
I thought Cam Mason did the fastest lap.
No, I think he was 0.4 behind. Either way round, it was like there was you two elites. You had Mason and you'd got Van Turen out at the front. They were one and two. Third fastest lap was Sparfell, and he was 1.4 seconds down on that team relay. And he was within, you know, if you said, Junior, it's just one lap. These are the best elites, some of the best elites in the world. You've got, you know, Van Turen out, man, somebody who really excels at Tabor, and yet Sparfell's putting down times like that. And he looked, I think, of all the places to stitch for a rear wheel puncture, coming out of the pit area pretty much onto the tarmac, it lets go, he goes wide onto the straight where he did with no time to make it back. It was a kilometre and a half basically from there to the pit again. That's game over.
I think with that where the puncture happened, not a lot of people notice, but if you're watching on an Apple TV, if you push down that little microphone button on the on your handset, and then you say to the handset, go back 10 seconds, it will rewind you 10 seconds, or go back 30 seconds. I've got these four eyes looking at me like, ooh. But yeah, I use it a lot, and I must have used it about 20 times for that. We kind of, after the race, went back to it, did our go back 8 minutes, and eventually found it. And it was really interesting because I thought, oh, maybe he'd had it beforehand, but I couldn't see it before. And by the time he came around that corner and you saw the back wheel stepping out, he definitely had the puncture. So it was somewhere between the start of the pit and going around that corner. And it looked like it was, that was completely dominated the race. You do feel for him, but Matt, if it's true that he really is the real deal, I wouldn't disagree with that. He'll be back for something else. Let's move on to the next race, the under 23 women. This one was hotly anticipated, but perhaps the surprise was that there was no surprise. We had Zoe Backstead taking the win really amazing win ahead of Zemanova from the Czech rider, ahead of Leonie Bentfeld. Perhaps not too much of a surprise podium, but Zoe, what an amazing ride. They're well in control the whole way.
I thought one thing that was really did start to become evident in this race was that the course conditions were drying. And it actually felt when you were out there that everyone was saying, it's getting quicker out there. It's getting quicker. And everyone who had said, and it was universal when I talked to everybody for about the under 23 race, the moment they had been down on site on the Friday day and on the Saturday, they said it's Zoe's race. You know, everybody. Magnus said, she's in the best condition. You know, this has been the target. She's really going well. This is everybody from on the inside of Zoe's camp to the commentators, the other teams. Nobody said anybody else's name other than Zoe's. And yet the course changed and it seemed to dry. And that would then play towards maybe some of the other riders. But no, she was just class apart. You know, we talk about Jerry with Fenn van Empel being job done. That focus, that switch on, that switch off. You know, Zoe's a real character. She really is. She's absolutely brilliant, fun, and really does light up like the room, the team. You know, she's a great laugh. But that she was so, you know, that was mission target.
Exactly. I had it written down in my notes for today, to be honest. It was like there's sort of the two Zoes. There's race in race Zoe, and then there's kind of friend Zoe. And if you want to see the difference between them, just watch when she goes past the pits for that very last time. It's kind of she switched from one to the other. It's kind of you've got this ultra focus, amazing, amazing rider, and then it's going, yeah, and it's sort of, yeah, just a completely different person in some respects, and then the a great friend and everything else. And from the the pressure suddenly was released at the end. Now, I mean, my car has got adaptive cruise control on it, and I thought that after 3 minutes into the race, she pushed like the adaptive cruise control for Zoe, and it was like she just kept on going at whatever speed, and if anything came up in front, then it kind of slowed down. She slowed down a little bit, like my car does, and then it was just that really in control the whole way. So impressive. We had Magnus on a couple of shows ago, and I think he was talking about how this is the focus for the year. Absolutely delighted that she got it. Of course, as not just from a GB perspective, but you know, from a promise in the sport side. So yeah, really, really impressive. The question is though, who's more likely to get the triple? Is it going to be Shirin or is it going to be Zoe? Both of them are junior champ and under 23 champ. Yeah, I don't know if we'll see. Yeah, well, Zoe. At the moment, based on form, I think Zoe looks more likely to be getting that triple. But Shirin van Anroy, of course, she's done the double first. One of them might make the triple. Maybe it'll be somebody else.
But Zoe's, this is just year one, you know, in under 23, really, isn't it? You know, she's that little bit further behind in terms of time scale, and yet she's now got to, and she's got the time in her career. And I think also she loves riding and racing, and I think Shirin does as well, but I think Zoe has that little bit that's going to maybe keep her there in the cross a bit longer. And, you know, we know that she loves riding the bike and just having fun. And that, I think you tend to see people in the race a little bit longer. I mean, there were good rides. You talked about Magnus being on the show. It was really good to see another guest on the show, Kira Bond.
Yeah.
Great ride by Kira. I was on the course when she was out on course on practice. And she was there. Sister was there racing for the first time as well. And I was talking to her mum, who I quite literally bumped into at the side of the course. Done that last at Yorkshire Cyclocross. And it was one of those things you sort of say, how's she going? She says, don't know. We can't talk to them. We're not allowed to speak to them at all on the weekend. And I said, is that a problem? She said, no. Kira, she's got that focus. She turns the phone off. She does that. She's got that focus, and it resulted in a 20th place. You know, that is good going. Great to see. And I thought there was a lot of people riding well. One rider who looked absolutely gutted is Murray Schreiber. The Holmgrens looked happy. They were right up there, you know, because they were the juniors moving up. But Murray Schreiber was absolutely gutted. And, you know, for somebody who can sprint, it's a course that you just need power.
Yeah, and I thought Schreiber, you saw her at the start. She had these gold glasses on. I thought, God, man, is that wise to show your intentions with gold glasses at the start? I think she didn't have her best day. The one I was really unsure about, and I think Ian, you mentioned it on previously, but it was Isabella Holmgren, and particularly with their lap times, are there echoes going out? Because we were just mentioning it, just as you were mentioning it, there's 12:46, 12:33, 12, and 11:55. She was taking 30 seconds out of the people ahead of her in those last few laps, and if it had been one lap longer, maybe she'd have ended up certainly on the podium, maybe in second.
Yeah, she literally got faster as the race went on, which in those conditions on that course were completely opposite for 99.9% of the other riders. Yeah. And it's almost like, was she not like focused on that first lap? She wasn't warmed up properly or something, but then just really rode into it. And I think for kind of almost 50% of the race, she was the fastest woman on course. And she hasn't even come out of it with a medal. How does that work? Very, very strange. I think Schreiber, massively disappointed. She was one of the favourites, but we haven't actually really seen her ever in heavy conditions do particularly well. Something that maybe she struggles with. She perhaps hasn't got that deep down kind of grunt, that kind of torque power needed in those conditions. So yeah, she was obviously disappointed. Ava Holmgren actually faded quite badly after a decent move through. I think she finished down maybe 17th, 18th in the end.
13th in the
13th.
End.
13th. Yeah. So fell away after initial moving through well. But yeah, for me, Isabella Holmgren, she should be kicking in herself. She should have taken away a medal from that race.
She lost it on the start. I'm looking at the split times here. She had the 11th fastest time on lap one, 12:47. Sixth fastest time on lap two, but then she was fastest on three and four.
Yeah, 50% of the race. Yeah.
You know, the back half of the race, she was really, really quick. When she was quick, she was quick. Zoe actually had the first two lap fastest times, but they were an 11:36 and 11:54. So it gives you an idea. Ava Holmgren, when you compare that, Ava had a shocking mid-race. You know, she went from 6th to 13th to 17th and then back to 13th again. It was really, really strange. I mean, Benfeld clearly picked the pace up. She was third fastest on laps 1, 3 and 4 and second fastest on lap 2. So would Holmgren have got Benfeld? I'm not sure she would, because I think Benfeld rode a smart race. She had enough to pick up when she needed to. But under 23, I think that race behind Zoe could be incredible for the next few years. And, you know, Kristina Semenova, we've almost lost over the fact that the home rider took second place. And that, you know, when we talk about noise at a venue, that ride, you could hear where she was. You could tell where she was. If you're watching, you could see and you could hear it. She was good. You know, she looked it in practice. She looked like she was out for a Sunday club run when she was doing the practice. It's like, I pressed it all the time. What are you worried about?
So the last race of the weekend, biggest surprise, maybe not, of the weekend is Matthew van der Poel took the win, as expected. So we had defending champions not having to change their wardrobe, which is quite nice for them. So Matthew van der Poel took the win ahead of Joris Nieuwenhuis and Michael van Turenhout. So, okay, Matthew, he looked like it was well under control. had a very nice finish to the race. I thought coming over the line, he had a nice celebration as he came over the line, rather than just looking and saying, "Yeah, there we go, job done."
Yeah, I think he got caught up. I saw him in practice Friday morning, Saturday as well. I was talking to the teams. I was having dinner most of the day with the teams who were going out doing the interviews for the UCI, and they were talking about, and they were just blown away by actually how much Tabor means to him. And you know, we always think he's you know, he's there because he's getting the most out of it, etc. But it was clearly, he was clearly quite emotional about being there, and I think in part that was because of Zdeněk Stybar's last race. And actually, I think that actually got to him. Because it was really evident. They were out on course training together. And you don't often see that. They were out chatting and riding up and down. And I think the, you know, the location, the course might not have been the most spectacular. You know, it's can be tricky to get to. But you know what? It certainly got to Van der Poel, I think. And I think in some ways that's why he thought about his role as a champion and that going over the finish. And maybe that's why we saw that nice, you know, non... Yeah, so what? It's another title kind of finish. It was good to see, that's for sure. And the crowds were nuts for it, as you'd expect. I mean, there were two levels of noise. There's the level of noise for the Czechia riders, and that includes Matthew Van der Poel, who might as well have been Czech for the weekend because he got just as loud as shouts. And then there's basically everybody else. And that was where you were at.
Yeah, and you know, and for the Czech riders, Michael Boris had a really, really good ride there. That must have been boosted by the local crowds. So yeah, a good ride from him. But Joris Nieuwenhuis, let's talk Joris Nieuwenhuis. He looked really comfortable. It looked like he knew what he was capable of doing, and he just went out there and did it, and was way ahead of third place.
Yeah, I think. His ride basically summed up the course and the conditions and what you had to do to get a good result, and basically never really go too deep into the red at any point for any length of time. We saw that with riders across the weekend. They'd put in a storming lap and you're like, they're on the move. And then it just kind of peters out and they just have to slow down to recover. Saw that a little bit with Michael van Turnhout make a really like big surge for the silver medal, but ultimately kind of went too deep, had to back off. Nieuwenhuis left that kind of late surge for the final lap to hold on to that silver.
Yep.
Didn't try to go with Van der Poel on that opening lap, even though that gap was kind of tantalizingly close. And you thought, if he just gives it full gas up here, he's onto the wheel. But he knew that that would probably be to the detriment of his race, like we saw with Van der Putter, who went with Van der Poel and ultimately paid the cost, even though he was only there for about a quarter, half a lap. So I think Nieuwenhuis, very clever, canny, older rider now, just knew exactly what had to be done. He's got Sven Nys in his corner telling him exactly how to kind of, yeah, ride a race like that. And he executed his perfect race and didn't worry about those around him and took away the silver medal, best of the rest. And kind of, you have to say, a lot of the riders on the start line would have known Van der Poel was going to win the race, and so were racing for second.
We said a lot of them. I mean, are there any that wouldn't have done?
you never know with the mentality of elite bike riders, do you? Professional bike riders. Some you come across some, and you look at their palmares, and you're like, where the hell do you get that confidence from? But that's why they're as good as they are. So I would have thought there would have been a few on there that were hoping that maybe with him having a problem, a bad day, etc., etc. Van der Poel is susceptible to a bad day. We've seen that in the past, but ultimately, not this weekend.
Speaking of bad days, Lars van der Haar broke his chain. Not something you see very often these days, but yeah, he had that broken chain, and that cost him 2 minutes, roughly, looking at the timing on that. And we know what Lars is like. He does tend to motor through at the end of the race, as he did here as well. He was picking off positions. But you know, if you pulled him 2 minutes closer to the front, he'd have been in with a shout for the podium. But no, as you say, it wasn't his day. He didn't go well.
And it's just chance, isn't it? I mean, where he stitched for that, the banks are steep. Maybe he rode him. Maybe he wasn't quite in the right gear. Maybe the chain just got just something happened. He hit it. It's so difficult to know. We don't often see chains. There was a period maybe 12 months ago, we saw a lot of chains left on the start line, you know, and it's we seem to have backed off that a little bit. But yeah, bad day. And he was just coming good. He was right in that fight. And I was really loving the fact we had him and Ellie Isabit together. You know, they're almost, you know, they're cast from the same kind of physical mold. Yeah. In a lot of ways, and neither of them give up. They're both very sort of low center gravity, smaller riders, punchy riders. Just like, yeah, they're going to be up there. Got to say, I liked seeing Jens Adams coming over the line.
Yes.
That made me smile very, very much as we came in through the finish. I thought that was really nice to see. I thought Clement Venturini, 16th place for him, that was a really good result and something that, you know, I think he'll be pleased with. And I think it showed just how good he is. To say he's done very little of the cross season internationally, Thibaut Nice, though, is that the worst day at the office from anybody who might have been up there?
Yeah, finishing in ninth. Okay, pop quiz question for you then, for both of you. This is gettable. Who of those who finished, who do you think had the slowest lap of the day?
I would
I'm looking to look at the computer. I just shut the computer down. Sorry.
I would hope for everyone's sake it was Lars van der Haar.
I know for a fact that Lars van der Haar, because I was just looking when Neil was talking about him losing 2 minutes, he did indeed lose. It was 10:04 before the lap. That is problem in 12 minutes for the lap. So he did 12 minutes. Was he the slowest? I'm not going to keep scrolling because there might be somebody slower.
There was someone who didn't have a mechanical last lap.
Oh, potentially Stibby.
Of course, yes. Yeah. And I thought, yeah, what a way to go out. He was so emotional and you know, giving all the credit to his supporters over the years he's been racing. You know, I think I was quite emotional seeing him. You know, I had the goosebumps just as much for that as anything else during the weekend. It was, you know, he's someone that we've really enjoyed watching for a long, long time. And, you know, when you think, goodness me, I can't believe that's the end of it.
It was, last race is always hard when you're on site because you're absolutely shattered. I was telling Neil before the show, my Garmin that I wear, you can actually go look at the stats and it actually tells you which are the weekends we go away for the commentary and where we are in the studio. So when we go away for the weekend, so my body battery never dips below about 31. It's usually about the 80, 90s at the top. It never went above 25 for the weekend and it was down on 4 or 5 for the majority of it. And so you're tired, you're emotional. And I'm going to blame that rather than Stevie coming over the line. For me, maybe, I think it's not often I've cracked in commentary, but I actually did crack on that. And I was really struggling because when I look back at watching the race and what got me watching racing and fighting to find TV feeds here, there and everywhere and dodgy, you know, YouTube videos, Stibar is one of those characters. And then you saw him come over the line and then he brought his family up and then he did the amazing thing of this is the team and these are the guys. And here's my dad bringing the bike up onto the stand. I mean, just what a gent. What an absolute ambassador for the sport. And then to top it off, I'm going to try not to cry now. To top it off, we were in the hotel and we'd been in the same restaurant. I'd eaten in the same restaurant all the way through and everybody disappeared off to the after party. And I thought, oh, I'm not doing that. You know, I'm here to work. I'm not here to party. I'm here to work. This is what I do, you know. And I was sat in the restaurant and they said, oh, we closed, but you can have a table over here. And I was like, oh, yeah, I've got something special. He said, oh, yeah, one of the riders is having a family and a team get together. And I'm like, okay. So he said, but we've asked and it's okay for you if you want to just to have a meal. It's not a problem. Just you and the person you're with, if you just want to sort of sat there. And next thing, in walks turning next to T-Bar, starts laying tables and telling people where they're going to sit and sorting it all out, and then comes over and says hello and says, this is a private moment. We need to not be here. And he's like, oh, no. It's okay. It's okay. It's no problem. I was like, oh, my goodness. And if that says anything about a rider, you know, end of his career, there's two random blokes sat in the corner having a meal. He's like, oh, don't worry. I know we've rented the entire restaurant out, but you can stay and have a meal. It's not a problem. You know, I was like, wow. You know, and I didn't do the selfies. I didn't do the, had I ever seen it? Sure enough. I was like, yeah, do you know what?
Have you booked him for the next Crosscast, Matt?
Do you know, I'm thick at times. I really should have done that. Yeah. The answer is no. I was kind of like trying to put my jaw up on a crane off the floor. As no, but it was sometimes when I think I should do the after party thing and I should be out there and do networking and all this sort of stuff, and I don't do it. I'm there to do the job and do the best job I can, and the kind of, you know, going to an after party leaves you absolutely shattered and you can't do the job great. So, or the presentations, I think, or yes. It does me. So that was the nice reward. I'll take that as karma.
Excellent. Well, I'll take the my decision to put this stupid flipping winning margin as karma. So, okay, let's go through our points between the three of us. So the first race of the day, okay, V8C, I had me. You had Philipson and Roman, who didn't get any points. Then we both all had Backstead. Then we all had Matthew van der Poel. And then we were mixed on the rest of the podium. So it should sound like I should be really doing really well on this until it comes to what would the winning margin be. And you both absolutely trounced me on it. So it meant overall, between the three of us, Matt, you are the winner amongst the three of us. We all got 10 points on day two.
Only just because of a good day one by the sounds of it.
Yeah. So Matt, you are the champion Crosscast pundit, but don't take any credit yet because you wait till what's coming up. Then Ian was second amongst us.
Well done, Ian.
And then I got a bronze.
So hang on. So what are the total points? Come on.
Total so points. 26 points for Matt, 22 for Ian, and 20 for me.
Today we were all over 20, so that's good.
Yeah, it's pretty good. But you're going to love this. Right then, I'm actually going to do the top four. Now, we already knew that Robert Clairvoyant Rogers is absolute genius. And he continued his winning ways. He's still got more points than us on the Sunday. Didn't do quite as well as the day before, but still got 13, and the best result from anyone was 16, so it's pretty amazing. So Robert Rogers, well done. You are the winner of the competition. But sorry, I've got to tell you who were second, third, and fourth. Right, Ian. Jordan Mann, someone you know.
Shut
finished
up.
Second overall.
Oh, my Lord.
You're never going to hear the end of it.
Oh, my God.
Oh, for a camera on Ian's face at this moment in time.
Before she met me, she didn't even know what cyclocross was.
Who got VHC, Backstead, Van der Poel, Van Turenhout. Yeah, really excellent, and was bang on the winning margin. So, yeah, well done, Jordan, finishing second. Okay, now it's your turn to have a go, to take the fun out of me, because in third place was Lotta Mansfield.
Excellent.
I taught her everything she knows. So she finished third. And then in fourth place, it was actually a tie in fourth between three people. Emma Martin.
Oh, for God, no! Oh, my God. So
Emma Martin.
Or everything she knows not.
And Rebecca Woodvine, who many of us know as well, and Nibsy from Nib Smith, who from Max Speed. So Nibs always does really well on this, actually. So Yeah, great. So thanks everyone for joining in the fun.
Please don't put the results out. No.
Particularly on, you know, we had one person with 16 points for day two, one with 15, and then a few with 14. And those were Jordan got the best on day two, Emma got the second best on day two, and Lotta got third best on day two. So, yeah.
We can take that. Come on, guys. Look, we can take that. We can, by association, we can say that we are in the presence of greatness, even if they did trounce us.
So we all three of us got trounced by our partners, stroke family members, stroke whatever. Yeah. So, but that was good fun. Next year, if I've got any sense about me, I'm not going to put in that stupid winning margin thing.
No, leave it in because I'm still going to take away the win in the Crosscast prediction from the presenters.
And at that, I think it is time for us to look forward and enter the Lasta Ronda. So coming up, we've got three more big races of the year. We've got the end of the X2O and we have the end of the Super Prestige Series. So these three races, you know, it's always interesting who's there, who's wearing their new jerseys. Will we even see the world champions jerseys? We don't always. Hopefully we will this time. The first race is Middlekirk. So one of those, you know, sort of classic parkland type of cross. Ian, I think you've raced Middlekirk.
I have indeed. It's kind of almost sums up Belgian cyclocross to a certain extent. Yeah. So nothing crazy going on. Normally have a bit of a fake sand pit somewhere, a set of planks that you can hop normally a little bit of mud and wind coming off the sea, so up on the coast Middlekirk. So yeah, looking forward to that one.
The last round of the Super Prestige. So at the moment I think Ellie Easerby has got it for the Super Prestige, but in the women's category then we've got Anna Marie Verst and Alvarado, who are both close to the front on that. It could switch, and I think even Inge van der Heijden's got a chance of moving up from third. So there is still quite a lot to play for on that, but it's one of those things where who else is going to take the points away? Yeah, if we do get Van Empel, for example, racing to show off the jersey.
It's really difficult to overturn any sort of points gap in the Super Prestige the way the points are. So, yeah, I had a look earlier and kind of even in the women's when there's only that, I think it's 6-point gap between Alvarado and Verst, like it's basically kind of 7 positions to overturn. It's, yeah, I can't see the overalls really being battled out. But that might be quite nice for us as viewers and commentators to, because all the riders will just be racing for the race. There won't be any of this, oh no, holding back because I just need to finish third or anything like that for the overalls. I think the riders will just be all in for the wins. So that might be quite nice.
Yeah. And then for the X2O series, so the women's elite X2O series, this is done on timing. Fem van Empel has won every single one of them. Can she make it a clean sweep? Well, does she want to make it a clean sweep? I think it's probably more of the question on that.
At what point does she go, do you know what, I've got a big road season coming up. I quite like to win a Grand Tour or so, and I've got to go some spring classics as well. So, you know, when do I take that move over?
Well, and she's 8 minutes ahead of Brand, so Brand still would need...
She can't lose it, surely, can she?
Well, she can if she doesn't race it.
2 races left, so she could lose 10 minutes.
But
is she really going? Yeah. Hmm.
But in the men's competition, it is a bit more open. Now, this time we've had 4 Van der Poel wins. I'm not expecting to see him back. Lars van der Haar is currently leading 4:29 ahead of Easerby and Mason. So Easerby and Mason are really fighting it out for, well, potentially for the win, realistically probably not, but certainly for second place on that. And you know, and there was, yeah, we spoke about it in the last show about how Mason has been, well, he wasn't favoured by the way the rules work on the fact that Easerby missed a round and almost had no penalty at all. But the two races, we've got Lille, one of those races which is around, looks like it's a nice place to go in the summer as well, you know, around a lake. It looks like some sort of leisure type of place. Ian, it's one of your race venues as well. You've raced there.
Yep, very sandy, kind of single tracky race. So unfortunately for Cam, a lot of that will come down to that opening lap. And we've seen him struggle with opening laps across the course of the season, and he's been able to battle through. Yeah, Lille, not one of those courses where you want to give away time. It's so fast, even in kind of wet, muddy conditions as such. It just gets wet in between the sand sections. And for me, Ellie Isabit has just been massively let off the hook through that Christmas period, missing rounds, but only losing kind of seconds on some of the races to Cam, which is really unfortunate. Brussels suits Cam a lot more, that technical hillier circuit that could be quite muddy at that time of year. So might be able to bring it back there perhaps. But yeah, for me, it looks like Lars has got that one sewn up without issue. Yeah. Ellie's looking to take that second, and Cam should move into the third place with Michael van Toorn out about 4 minutes back. So Cam can't have a shocker at any point, but yeah, should be sewn up across the board really in the overalls, which is a little bit disappointing. But again, we're going to be seeing racing for the win, so that's quite nice.
Yeah, and the Brussels course around a university campus, it's got a bit of everything on it, and it's a course which is, just by chance, it seems to have different weather every year. Sometimes it can be dry and fast. It was a real mud fest, and we've seen it in the snow and the ice before. So who knows? Time will tell. That's a couple of weeks away. The other thing which is coming up over this period is we may see the return of Tounets. That we're expecting to see the return of Tounets, who's coming back after his ban. Really no idea what sort of form Tounets will be in. Be interesting to see, but yeah, we'll see how
more about
returns.
How long his hair is.
Well,
he wasn't going to get it cut, was he, till he came back?
So I think he has had a cut now. Yeah.
Has he? I was hoping to see, like, you know the Forrest Gump, you know, when he goes running around America and like the hair gets longer and longer and longer and longer. I was hoping to see Tounets like with maybe a plait or something. That would have been really sort of done it for me.
There was a video of him training the other day with Dan Suter and his brother Tice, and he was leading the group of three and looked like he was distancing the other riders through the sand of their little training venue. So I'd have thought he's trained really, really hard from the sounds of things, but obviously hasn't been able to race, so he's going to miss that race sharpness. But it'd be interesting to see where he slots back in.
Yeah, I think he's wanting to make a statement. So next time we'll be back will be our final show of the year. So it'll be great if you could join us. And we'll be doing a bit of a wrap-up of the season as a whole. Matt, Ian, have you got more cyclocross duties coming up?
Go on, you go first, Ian.
I've got Mordegem tomorrow, the exact cross. So that's live. I think that's actually live on Eurosport 1 or 2, as well as on the Discovery Digital platforms, then commentating on both of the races that we've talked about at the weekend. And then, I'll be off for a little break and then back for some road commentary at the end of February with Gran Camino. So, stage race to finish off Feb.
Excellent. Nice stuff. Yeah, it's kind of that time of year where things start to transition over. I'm looking forward to watching the next crosses, I must admit, and not having to make copious notes for the upcoming World Cup, because I've no more cyclocross commentary now. The World Cups and the World Championships are done. So I'm actually overnighting in terms of the commentary. So 2 o'clock in the morning till 4 o'clock in the morning, Friday night into Saturday morning, and the same on Saturday night into Sunday morning for the BMX World Cup from Rotorua. I don't choose the venues. I mean, what a great place to go. But in terms of commentary, it's not the best time of the day to be talking about that. So, got that coming up. And lots of the February Esports, so My Woosh on the Sunday Race Club will be immediately following one of those shows. So I'll be doing a 2 o'clock in the morning live till 2 o'clock in the afternoon live, and then probably looking like a zombie in Eckington where we are for the rest of the day. But, you know, I quite like this time of year because you get to see a lot of people moving over and a lot of different disciplines. It's time to sort of start thinking about what else is going to happen. And yet you've still got the keen guys in the cross. I'm looking forward to the wrap-up show, and that is for sure. So definitely looking up for that. Neil, are you... there can't surely be any more cyclocross races to race. Are you getting ready for the new season already? Are you having a break?
I've had a break, and I'm just starting to open the legs up a little bit to remind myself how to do a bit of training for the mountain bike season. I'm doing a lot more running at the moment, and then we'll be back for the mountain bike season, so I've got some mountain bike races on the calendar. One thing I'm going to be doing is drinking a lot of coffee, and one thing that I think is good for the listeners to do is to go on to buymeacoffee.com/crosscast, and that's where you can buy us virtual coffees to help cover the costs of the show.
Please do. We don't get paid for this. We do this because we love cyclocross. We do have some costs that we need to cover. So if you do help us, please do buy a coffee, buymeacoffee.com, aka the Keep the Crosscast ad-free campaign. We don't want to put adverts on there, but we do need to cover the cost. So the more of you that buy a coffee, the less likely that is to happen. Let's be really honest about it.
Excellent. And at that, I think we'll wrap up. So thanks, Ian. Thanks, Matt. And thanks, listeners. And we'll see you on the other side of the tape. Bye.